Federal Drive.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news. Now, this program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest is the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from the 11th District in Virginia, my congressman, and the former chair of the House Committee on Government Reform. And Congressman Davis is currently the director of federal government affairs for Deloitte LLP. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to this discussion. When you were on the Hill, one of the things I was at GSA, one of the things I really appreciated is your deep interest in government procurement issues. With that in mind, you know, we have new leadership in the House and the changes. Where do you see, you know, the procurement oversight and reform on the Hill going during this Congress?
Well, there are a lot of budget pressures on Congress right now, and there are, as you know, through the procurement system, there's a lot of money can be squeezed out of that and be made more efficient. So I think you're seeing some dialogue between the White House, particularly OMB, and the appropriate chairman of the committees, Lieberman, in the Senate and in the House, Darrell Issa, in terms of trying to move some kind of procurement reforms that will allow procurement officials to move more efficiently than they can today, give them a larger toolbox, trying to give them a little more autonomy to try to get the best deal for the government. And I think you'll see probably at a time when government may be shrinking, seeing more procurement officials in government, too. I think we found out that not having them around sometimes ends up costing you money.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, I was at GSA during the '90s, and you know, in the downsizing of the acquisition workforce, and you can see, you know, with the pace of procurement over the last 10 years, you know, they did and continues to be need to be a rebuilding of the workforce. In terms of the drive for cost savings, you know, are there areas that you think the government trends that we'll start to see in terms of best value procurements, or I know one of your favorite topics, share and savings?
Well, I think you'll see some more share and savings. I'm hopeful they're allowed under the FAR today, but because multi-year, this doesn't seem to work. So I think you may see some activity in that direction that will allow more of that. Unfortunately, right now, as government starts to cut its budgets, we're seeing some moves in the wrong direction. For example, some of the best value procurements are actually driven by price. It may not say that as you read the RFP and the selection criteria, but at the end of the day, just because they're in a continuing resolution type of situation in these agencies, you're finding that price is a very big determinative right now.
I'm seeing that, you know, on the contractor side, that the pressure on pricing, you know, in particular, you know, you have DOD's Better Buying Initiative. That's a lot about reducing costs. There is this constant pressure on reducing costs, and that sort of leads to another area, I think, and I know an area that you were a big promoter of, and worked through, for example, the Federal Acquisition Streamlining Act of 1994, and that's commercial item contracting. It seems to me that's a tool in the toolbox, as you referenced, that it needs to be reinvigorated. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't think there's any question about it. Look, at the end of the day, government officials need to have a broad array of contracting vehicles, contracting tools, to try to get the best value for the taxpayer. That's what ought to drive procurement. We've gone through many, many years where that hasn't always been first and foremost in the procurement officer's mind or the agency's mind. Many people look at the procurement system as a way to share the government's wealth, spread it out so that small businesses can get some. We can do geographic distribution. We can do Buy America. We can do other things And they're all fine and dandy, except that at the end of the day, it means that we're not getting the best value for the taxpayer. We're trying to do other things and meet other public policy goals with the procurement system. Now the budgets are very, very tight. I think we've got to return to those days saying, how do we get the best value? How do we get, for our constituents? How do we reduce costs at the federal level? And you don't do that by making the procurement system look like a jobs corps. You do it by getting the best value, period.
Yeah, and
it's the same kind of thing we do as consumers. If you're putting an addition on your house, you don't worry about buying American products, or you don't worry about Davis-Bacon Act, or you don't worry about protests, and you don't worry about set-asides. You just worry about getting a thing done on time and as cheap as you can.
Yeah, and fundamentally, from my perspective, having transitioned from government to the private sector, one of the things that really it struck me is the fact the government, frankly, has to leverage the commercial marketplace. The pricing, the competition that's in the commercial marketplace drives solutions and new technologies that, in this environment, I think the government's definitely got to be looking for in terms of finding ways to save money. Do you see the ideas like cloud computing, and other potential niche solutions as something that, contractors who are in this space need to focus on?
Well, I think certainly for the duration of this administration, cloud computing seems to be the direction that they're going. I'm just not smart enough to know how this is going to play out over the long term. But I think being within that cloud offers a lot of possibilities and cost savings, at least over the short term. If I were going to be putting together a federal strategy, I would certainly look at what I could offer in that area.
Well, right now we have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Tom Davis about the state of government procurement and where things are headed. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Throughout the history of American defense, Northrop Grumman has helped give the men and women of our military an edge with innovative design. Northrop Grumman delivered the products and systems that changed the course of battles and of wars. Today, our technology makes a difference in every domain. Air, land, sea, space, and cyberspace. The people of Northrop Grumman build satellites, unmanned systems, electronic systems, information technology, as well as submarines and ships. We build the systems that give our troops a moment-by-moment picture of the battle space and a critical war-fighting advantage, along with shields from enemy threats. For 70 years, wherever the American military has served, Northrop Grumman has supported our nation's and our allies' defenses with the most advanced technology. Northrop Grumman, defining the future.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to the Honorable Tom Davis, former congressman from Virginia, and we're talking about the state of procurement, federal procurement. And when we took our first break, Tom, you were talking a little bit about government workers and contractor workers and how that all shakes out and the flexibilities are in that area. Where do you see the administration's insourcing versus outsourcing sort of inherently governmental type approach heading over the next couple of years?
Well, I think we need to understand the political coalitions behind each party, and one of the major coalitions, the Democratic Party, which is this administration's a Democratic administration, is organized labor. And organized labor, particularly the AFGE within government, to a lesser extent, there are other federal unions, National Treasury Employees Unions, and others, don't like outsourcing because they like to have the work done in-house. To the extent it's done by federal workers, it gives them a chance to, unionize, get dues-paying members, etc. There were some early moves by the administration to try to bring more work in-house. There were informal percentages that they were trying to take 3% in-house of contracting work and the like. But I think what's happened is, as the budget crisis is upon them, they're trying to look now at the easiest way to save money. Some cases that's going to be business as usual. and they're back regular, try what's called what regular order. What we're seeing, though, are cuts in contracting with body shops, with the FTEs, with what we call staff augmentation. Because as you take government down, those are the easiest people to get rid of. But in a lot of these niche areas, in a lot of the high technology areas, government doesn't have the in-house capability. They're not likely to get it over the short term. They may not get it over the long term just because of some of the cost of some of this, of getting key people into government. So I think outsourcing continues. There will be some areas where the administration will try to bring things in-house. A little noted fact is that competitive sourcing, the old A76, was abolished by the last Congress in H.R. 1, and the Republicans' bill that passed the House, they restored competitive sourcing. I don't know that the administration will sign that or it's likely to get through the Senate, but you always have this zigzag between the two parties over what should be done by contractors and what should be done in-house. But I think what we're going to see over the next couple of years, it's going to be dictated by how quickly we can get it done, how cheaply we can get it done. So there's still going to be a lot of work for contractors.
Yeah, it seems to me it's about managing the resources that you have. And I would go back to, you know, your comment in the first section. It's the tools in the toolbox. And to me, you know, it is trying to figure out what the right mix of government versus contractor performance of various functions. You know, what's that best value ultimately for the taxpayer?
Except this doesn't operate in a vacuum. We have to remember it's still politics. And in politics, you have constituency groups that act and put pressures. And as the election approaches, you can see more demands, I think, coming into
maybe the administration
from its base.
Yeah, maybe I was being a bit idealistic, I guess, or hopeful.
Yeah, we talk about an imperfect world.
Right.
It never is.
No, it is not.
neither party is immune from the politics on this. So you've got to factor that in and recognize that symbolically, at least, with the Democratic administration, they're going to have to do some things that appear to be pro-labor. And right. Yeah, it's going to get into the insourcing, outsourcing to some extent. Having said that, they still have to run a government. And so they have some very competent people in the administration, I think, who are aware of this. And it's never a straight line to efficiency. It's kind of a jagged line around all of these different landmines that are put out there by your political actors and interest groups. But I think they've got to run a government at the end of the line, and they understand the costs involved. And so I think there's going to continue to be plenty of work for contractors, particularly those who offer a niche benefit.
Well, how about the you touched briefly on it in our first segment, but how about the acquisition workforce? Do you think things are headed in the right directions in terms of?
They are. On the acquisition workforce, things are going in the right direction in the macro sense, and there's a realization among both parties that you need a good, strong, engaged acquisition workforce to make contracts work. You need good people on both sides of the table to do that. In the past, it hasn't always been that way. Sometimes when they've tried to cut government, they've cut acquisition people and found they haven't saved anything because some of these contract costs balloon. So there is that realization. But you have to couple that with the fact that right now you have freezes in government hiring in a number of areas. You have pay freezes, which means it's going to be more difficult in some ways to get people to come in from the private sector back into the public sector. You have to go through training. This is not a cheap startup. But I think the trend is, yes, we're going to have to spend more on acquisition, and there's a bipartisan agreement. There's no philosophical disagreement on that.
Well, that's, you hear from DOD, for example, too, that one of the things in terms of freezing, they're still, you talk to Shea Assad, and they're still on target to, hire and, make investments in their acquisition workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Turning to another topic real quick, in this environment, what do you see as GSA's, General Services Administration's, role, in terms of the procurement and trying to address, some of these various challenges?
Well, they're the lead procurement agency in government. They do a very good job of it. They're constantly trying to be innovative. I think for those who are interested in any kind of green technology or offer, energy savings at this point, you have a committed administrator in Martha Johnson, who is dedicated to this. And I think it's going to offer a whole host of new business opportunities in some of those areas as well.
Well, yeah.
They maintain the schedules, the GSA does, and is, you know, the largest government-wide buyer.
Yes, that sort of strikes me as, you know, the idea of energy. I didn't quite pick up on that. That's a great point in terms of energy savings versus share in savings. It's sort of the same concept to the extent, or can be the same concept to the extent, you know, the government can use the private sector to make investments that return energy savings that the contractors could potentially share in. You know, that could be a win-win for everybody.
It is. I think they're looking at that. These are also long-term savings when you get into the energy business. It's not a one-time savings that you can pop on. These are savings that are built into the long-term base of government. So there's a huge commitment on the part of GSA to move in this direction. I think you're seeing, to a lesser extent, but seeing the same commitment made on the defense side. So there are a lot of possibilities there that you wouldn't have seen 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, right now we have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Congressman Tom Davis about the state of procurement. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the Coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the Coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Congressman Davis, and we've been talking about the state of government procurement. When we took our last break, we were talking a little bit about GSA and its role in procurement. And I think one of the sort of things that goes below the radar, and something I know you're very interested in, is cooperative purchasing, the ability of state and local governments to utilize the GSA Schedules program. Where do you see that going, and what do you see its benefit for state and locals?
Well, cooperative purchasing right now, which allows the state governments and local governments to purchase from GSA schedules, is applied only to the Group 70 schedule, which is IT, and it follows an adoption of the schedules by state legislators. Some legislatures have done that. It's proved an easy buy for those legislatures that have done that. I think you're going to see some effort to try to widen that from just the Group 70 schedule into other areas as well. I doubt you'll get into pharmaceuticals. I think that you get a lot of pushback from the pharmaceutical manufacturers to try to sell to the state at the same discounts they sell to the federal government. But I think there are a number of other areas where you'll try to see that extended. You need a federal law to do that. States are really pressed for dollars right now, just like the federal government. And unlike the federal government, states can't print money. So their borrowing is limited. And as a result of that, being able to go to the federal schedules, being able to utilize federal procurement policies is many times a lot easier than it is under their current policies. So I think you'll see that movement in an effort by the states to save money, get a broader variety of contractor offerings, and try to get some of the discounts that the federal government gets. It's a good deal for everybody when that happens, but there has been institutional resistance on the part of a lot of middlemen who control purchasing and sales to state governments, that if the schedules come into view, they're going to be out of jobs. And in the past, they have limited the ability of Congress to get into this area and apply it to the states.
Yeah, I think the IT schedule, Schedule 70, you mentioned, does about $17 billion annually in federal purchases, and I think There's about a half a billion that's state and locals. Mm-hmm. And seems to me that's a, you know, there is a big potential market there that in terms of providing additional competition and pricing for state and locals who are under significant budget pressure. I just had a thought and I wanted to ask you about where you think this is headed. And that's the 3% withholding. That's the current law that ultimately state and local governments and the federal government are going to have to withhold 3% of payments to government contractors for purposes of tax compliance. And there have been over the years since this, that was enacted, efforts to try to overturn that or repeal it. Where do you see that going? This session?
Congress has deferred this since it was passed several years ago. Congress continually defers its implementation. So there's legislation on the Senate floor this week, an amendment by Senator Scott Brown, pending legislation that would get rid of this. There's like legislation sponsored by Congressman Herger of California and the Ways and Means Committee, and Congressman Neal, I think, from Massachusetts, that would get rid of it. So both parties, I think, recognize the need to get rid of this. At the time it was adopted, it was going after tax dollars that were owed by government contractors to the federal government that weren't being paid, and they thought this was a good way on audit to find out if they owed money and they could subtract it from the final amounts owed. In the ensuing time, a number of other pieces of legislation have passed to make it easier and to get better policing of what contractors owe the federal government, some of them on a pre-contract award basis. So they've saved a lot of this money already. There's not the savings you once had in this. Secondly, this means for small businesses that the profit in some of these contracts isn't going to be taken out for 2 or 3 years after. This is going to cut down the number of people that are willing to bid on government contracts. It's an illusory savings at this point. You're going to be driving people from the marketplace, something you don't want to do if you have trying to get competition. So I think there's a realization, and I think it will be, if not repealed, it's set to go into effect next January.
Mm-hmm.
At least deferred again for an indefinite period of time. Why do they defer it versus repeal? It's because under the Congressional Budget Office rules, they have to put a cost over a 10-year period of what the current law means, what it would result in. And if you only defer it for a year at a time, they don't carry those 9 years additional savings that they would have had into the budget process, and it masks the real
cost.
It's just the usual trickery by, I always say, accountants who went to the University of Houdini.
There's a lot of those.
There's just a lot of that. It's not the accountant's fault. It's your Congress gets it, and they're trying to mask how bad the budget deficit really is.
Yeah, well, speaking of the budget deficit, we've got a couple minutes left, and I wanted to ask you this question. Like, if you were king for the day, and you could
last about a day, I think.
Well, you could, it'd be a very productive day, let's say that. You could solve the budget crisis. In terms of the budget, what would your ideas be with regard to how to bridge the gap in terms of revenue versus expenditures?
Well, first of all, just remember this: we're borrowing 40 cents for every dollar the government spends this year.
That's amazing.
That is absolutely unsustainable, and it is masked by the fact that we're paying for two wars or two and a quarter wars or whatever, but it's that is masked by the fact that interest rates are so low. So the percent we're paying in interest right now is artificially low, and yet most of our debt at this point is short-term debt. So when interest rates rise, as they will before long, they're going to rise with a vengeance, and our whole portfolio will go from like 6% of federal spending. It can easily go to 10, 11, 12% of federal spending, which means you either borrow more, you're going to have to drive other costs out of the government. The other problem is baby boomers are retiring in droves, and when you take a look at spending, I'm going to just list a handful of areas that don't even get into discretionary spending and walk you through what this means. When you take Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, federal pensions, veterans benefits, and debt service, that is almost two-thirds of federal spending in those areas. Now, what does that mean? That means that about two-thirds of the federal budget is spent on retirees. That means we are not spending the money we are spending, and remember, we're borrowing 40 cents in the dollar. We're not spending that in investing in the future. In a global competitive economy, instead of investing in the future, which is what a business would do, as a country, we're investing in the past. That's the General Motors model. And General Motors, they thought, we're General Motors. We can get away with it. Well, you can't. And what's going to happen in Congress is sooner or later, if Congress doesn't act and the leaders don't have the courage to act because they're going to offend powerful interest groups, whether it's seniors or whatever, that the bond markets will act. And the bond markets take no prisoners. And at that point, your Portugal or your Greece or your Ireland, our percent of GDP that it goes for debt service when you include the Social Security Trust Fund debt that we owe is higher than some of the countries in Europe that are all under siege right now. But what's worse is with the retirement of boomers, it's slated to get worse. So you're going to have to attack those retirement programs, and you're going to have to do it quickly. And you know, you could make some changes right now where you raise the age for and this kind of thing. They're controversial, but it buys you a little bit of time. But it's a very difficult situation right now we've gotten ourselves into, because a generation of political leaders has found that it's unpopular to raise taxes, it's unpopular to cut programs, so they've just sent the bill on to the next generation. And I would get right into attack those entitlement programs immediately. And you're going to defense it, everything is on the table. You're going to have to do some across the board. It's a very serious situation. Just got to get the confidence of the bond market.
On that positive note, I want to thank Congressman Davis today for sharing his views on the procurement system and on the budget. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
WFED Washington, WWFT